Hi, this is Scott Finn, and welcome to The Front Porch. This is where we tackle tough issues facing Appalachia and West Virginia. I'm joined, as always, by Rick Wilson of the Charleston Gazette Mail and the American Friends Service Committee, and columnist Lori Lynn from the Charleston Daily Mail, part of the Charleston Gazette Mail. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Scott.
And today we're going to talk about immigration. Donald Trump and immigration, but more specifically, West Virginia's lack of immigration and what that means for our future. Lori, you had a really interesting column about this in the Charleston Gazette Mail. I'm wondering if you could talk about it.
Mainly talking about Donald Trump and his kind of remarkable surge to the top of the polls in the GOP presidential race. What I was pointing out was he does have one substantive issue. You know, his candidacy is very much about his kind of reality show demeanor, but he talks a lot about immigration, and a lot of people are interested in that. And the point I made in the column is that neither major party seems to really be very interested in it. And so he's kind of seized that opening, and I think that's a large part of his appeal.
So a lot of people would say, oh, he's just a racist, nativist, whatever,
sure,
and that's what he's appealing to. You saw something more to that appeal.
Well, you know, immigration is an issue. I think it's very similar to free trade in that I think every economist would tell you that free trade is a good thing for the country, right? Overall, it benefits people. But there are winners and losers. You know, try telling the guy who's lost his job in Detroit that free trade is a great thing. It's not a great thing for him overall. And I think there are people who can legitimately say that they're losing out from immigration, primarily low-skilled, low-income workers who are competing with the immigrants for jobs. You know, those people legitimately are worried about, and some people are worried about immigration for reasons that I regard as less legitimate, you know, cultural crime, things like that. But I think both parties kind of want to gloss over the people who are actually losing from immigration.
Can I go back to Trump a little bit, though? In his immigration paper, you know, it is riddled with, I mean, I know facts and reality don't count much in American politics today, but I mean, it is just riddled with inaccuracies. Like, the number of immigrants in the country has gone down fairly dramatically since the recession. As far as being a drain on social programs, there's a lot of data that shows they pay more into programs in which they're not eligible to receive. They have arrest rates lower than the general population. So we're saying the attempt to stir up resentments always works because there's a part of us that appeals to. But again, there's not a whole lot of factual basis.
Well, he wants to repeal the 14th Amendment. So, you know, that right there tells you, I think, a little bit about how serious a lot of it is. And he's actually sparked quite a conversation in the past week about birthright citizenship and anchor babies, which apparently is a controversial term now as well.
Let me just say, I think in a fantasy world, a Trump administration would be awesome, especially like if Gary Busey was Secretary of State and Meatloaf or Gene Simmons was vice president. That would be like in a fantasy world.
Well, that's like an alpha male presidency right there all across the board.
Maybe I just have comb over envy on this one. But you know what? I wonder, though, whether a lot of people who are responding for whom Trump's message resonates are actually low-wage workers without high school diplomas. In a way, when I look at his appeal, I think back to the early days of the 1900s, say in places like Russia, where there are groups like the Black Hundreds telling poor Russians that all your problems are caused by Jews. But, I mean, I think it's an old trick politically, and it works for some people some of the time.
Well, it's an easy scapegoat, right? And in West Virginia, the idea that immigrants are taking our jobs, if folks hold that idea, it's kind of silly. We have the lowest percentage of foreign-born people living in West Virginia than any state in the country. And so, one, what's causing that? Is it just the fact that we have lack of job opportunities? Or is there something deeper that you feel like might prevent foreign-born people from coming to a place like West Virginia?
I would say it's overwhelmingly the lack of jobs. You know, I think people tend to go where the jobs are, and obviously, there aren't many here, but people also like going where there are other people like them. You know, you see places that have, you know, kind of a critical mass of immigrant communities, you know, from depending on where they're from. And so I'm sure that is part of it.
I think it's the labor market has a lot to do with it, and demand generally, even in 2006, which is the first time I looked at it, when the immigrant population was surging, we actually lost the number of immigrants back then. And you know, the overall, the number has gone down since then.
Our history is filled with immigrants coming to West Virginia to work in the coal mines, to work in the steel factories, to work at Union Carbide. If anything, I think there's been a regression. We have less diversity than we did 10 or 20 or 100 years ago. What does that mean for our state to be an island, some people say a ghetto, of white people in a nation that is increasingly diverse?
I mean, I think it's a West Virginia could actually benefit from an influx of new people, including immigrants. If you look at our population, we're aging. We have a lot of people who are elderly. I mean, who's going to take care of the population here if we don't get an influx of new people?
So, yeah, immigrants tend to be more fertile. They have more kids. They tend to be more entrepreneurial than native-born population. So, and you see that here. A lot of the immigrants that we do have are running businesses. You know, every Mexican restaurant in Charleston is basically run and staffed by immigrants.
So there's also this push, and Donald Trump came out with his immigration plan this week to do a lot of things to discourage immigration. And one of the things that they're trying to discourage is employment. For example, an E-Verify system to make sure that people have certain documents before they can get any sort of work. In West Virginia, the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation has been very active in trying to keep illegal immigrants off of construction work sites. Whereas when I lived in Florida, if you go to Texas, illegal immigrants working on construction sites is very common. So is this wise? Are we smart to be working so hard in West Virginia to keep out immigrant labor, even illegal immigrant labor, or is this shooting ourselves in the foot?
Well, I think the concern that groups like the Affiliated Construction Trades have is, you know, having a group of workers that's easily exploited, and they're concerned with local jobs for local workers. It's not necessarily xenophobia in a case like that. And I think, you know, that's a whole different thing. There are certain policies that are in place now that I think do put workers in an unfair position. Some of the guest worker programs where the slot is owned by the employer, not by the immigrant, and where they can be sent back if they can't change jobs. I mean, I think that is a situation that's just set up for exploitation. It's unfortunate. I think basically anytime workers don't have rights, where they don't have status, that you create a situation where you can pull people down. That's the main issue, this unfair exploitation situation.
Well, Laura, you're talking about the politics of this. Democrats don't want to deal with concerns over immigration because they want to appeal to the growing immigrant groups, especially Hispanics. The Republicans don't want to deal with immigration in part because they have Chamber of Commerce types that want ample workforce. That leaves the opening for Trump, right? He's playing to that sort of group that isn't being served by either party.
Yeah, I think Gallup in a recent poll found that for 7% of respondents across the country, immigration was the biggest issue. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, we're talking 10, 15 issues that they had to choose from. So 7% is a pretty big number when you're looking at two parties that aren't really interested in talking about it. That's a big number to exploit. And I think that, you know, obviously that's not all of Trump's appeal. There are plenty of people who just aren't really that engaged, and he's the person that they've heard of. But that 7%, I think, is what he is drawing from a lot.
Rick, other places that have population decline issues, Dayton, Ohio, for example, have actually made it a policy to try to recruit immigrants to come and move into town with some success.
How have they done that? What are they doing?
It's a combination of some government intervention. There might be some efforts to help people find housing. But mainly, it's really just a public relations campaign with the civil sector coming together to try to make it clear that we welcome this community. And once a community gets a toehold in a region, whether it's the Hmong refugees coming to the Twin Cities or whether it's Middle Eastern people coming to Dayton, once they get a toehold, mm-hmm. they bring family, friends, word of mouth, and all of a sudden you have a community of
right.
people. And I just kind of wonder, I don't see anything like that happening in West Virginia. I just wonder, what if the city of Charleston, what if Danny, if you're listening, stood up and said, you know what, Charleston is going to welcome immigrants, and we're going to bring them into the city, we're going to help them find housing. I just wonder how that would go over, and I wonder whether that would be something that would help to sustain Charleston.
I know I have a coworker there who's worked on making Dayton a welcoming city. And, you know, the thing to keep in mind is there is a net gain when you have an immigrant population because people, it doesn't just increase the supply of labor, it increases demand and economic activity. and creates a lot of opportunities. It's, you know, one example of this that I think changed a lot of economists' thinking was the Mariel boat lift in the 1980s when huge number of people were sent here from Cuba. And I think the Miami labor market increased by about 45,000 people. And they were thinking, oh, my God, this is going to put all these people out of work. But it generated a lot of demand. And it had virtually no effect on the actual employment situation.
So. But again, say you're a worker in a hotel down in Texas near the border and you clean hotel rooms. Is it realistic to say that immigrant labor coming across into the country has no effect on your employment prospects? I just don't think that's realistic.
I hope an economist is listening. I wonder if it depresses wages, but boosts the economy.
And there are short-term and long-term effects, right? I mean, long-term, it probably does boost the economy. But for that person, what do we expect that person to think?
Well, and this is, I think, Rick, you talked about how frustration over immigration might not be just about frustration over immigration. This could be part of the larger frustration about the decline of good-paying jobs for people that don't have a high degree of education.
I mean, what I would say, if you look back at the trends over the last 30 years, we've seen changes in the tax structure that have distributed wealth upward. We've seen attacks on unions that continue to this day. We've seen deregulation and other things. We've seen trade deals that are not so much about free trade as they much are about capital mobility at the expense of workers. And so to say in the face of all that, that this brown person is the problem is a little disingenuous, I think. Also, some research I've seen, there's quite a lot of it on there that if there are people who are likely to be displaced, it's often immigrants who got there a little bit before.
Right. If you're an immigrant here, what is in your best interest is to shut it down as soon as you get here to other people coming after you.
Speaking of immigration, it's funny that the state food of West Virginia is really an immigrant food, or at least it's something that came over from Italy and joined with native needs. It's the pepperoni roll. Stick of pepperoni and or slices wrapped in bread in a way that miners could take down with them and keep all day long. So this is a sacred institution in West Virginia, and there was a huge controversy over this recently.
It looked like for a while, you know, horror of horrors, Sheetz was going to outsource their pepperoni rolls to Pennsylvania or some other place, which, again, someone pointed out would be like outsourcing your pierogies to, like, Mingo County. You know, just some things are not meant to be, you know. And righteous wave of indignation, you know, rose among people in West Virginia who called and contacted Sheetz, which, to its credit, responded right away. Again, I tweeted on this, and they favorited my tweet when I thanked them for doing it.
Were you surprised by that they responded so immediately? And
well, I think they've really moved into West Virginia to market it here. And I think they pay more than minimum wage. They don't make people work alone all night and things like that. So they're clean, you know, it's a positive thing. I think it's a smart move to respond.
Oh, yeah. I was very impressed, though, that they were so on the ball and really, you know, right away. And now we've won the pepperoni roll war, right?
That's right. And, you know, a friend of mine pointed out, if we responded to other issues as well and as quickly as we did to the pepperoni roll thing, how differently the world might look.
They used to have three companies, and the company that actually brought this to light did not end up getting the final contract. They went down to one supplier, Industrial Home Bakery, out of Clarksburg, West Virginia. If you're listening, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Also, you know, for a rare look, a coveted look behind the curtain of the front porch, we recorded a conversation on this, which was lost for technical reasons. It's all right, Scott.
Just had to bring that up, didn't you?
And I actually brought in some pepperoni rolls, and one of them that we tried was from the company that got them.
You know what? The reason I had to get rid of that is all the chomping that was going on. We learned the hard way. You can't eat the pepperoni rolls while you talk about the pepperoni rolls. So a West Virginia institution saved. That's a part of our cultural richness that we've embraced as West Virginian.
Oh, and America is so unique in that way. You know, all over the country, we have institutions and, you know, things like pepperoni rolls, but even bigger that have been shaped by our immigrant past. And, you know, immigration is a very important thing in America, and we have birthright citizenship, which is almost unique here and certainly in the Western Hemisphere. And so, you know, I think it would be a shame to lose that.
Well, thanks for listening to The Front Porch. That's Lori Lynn of the Charleston Gazette-Mail and Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. Listen every week at 4:50. And also check out our other podcast, Inside Appalachia. It has a whole podcast about the pepperoni roll and other unique foods to Appalachia. Find that at wvpublic.org. And thanks for listening.